No opinions, no arguing, just the news. Right now. Right now.
Florida State Legislature passing a new congressional map. Cordell Scott's on News Radio 92.3.
Hours after Florida State House voted 83-28 along party lines to approve a new congressional map, the state Senate did the same.
Record the vote.
21 yeas, 17 nays, Mr. President.
So the bill passes.
Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
First thing I'd like to share with all is homelessness is a system. It's not individual providers. It's a community filled with providers. It's a community filled with faith-based organizations, volunteers, nonprofits, service providers, hospitals. It's not just a challenge, or it's not just a shelter challenge. People think homelessness and they think that we just need to build more shelter capacity. Well, shelter capacity is important. That's not how we're going to solve this problem for our community.
Bruce Cady is the relatively new, he's been in the job a few months, executive director for Opening Doors in Northwest Florida. They are the Continuum of Care coordinating agency. And a Continuum of Care, in case you're not familiar.
First off, a Continuum of Care, specifically a homeless Continuum of Care, is a community's response to homelessness. It's not one provider, it's not one agency, it's not one local government or county government. It's all of us together. What the Continuum of Care provides are a variety of different services that are essential for us to move individuals through the homeless service delivery network. It also provides the infrastructure to capture and track data to inform our leaders in the community and to inform our service providers on what's working and, quite honestly, what's not working.
So everybody who's working on homelessness in this area is a part, or maybe should be, but isn't, to some degree, of the Continuum of Care. Whatever facet of the issue they're dealing with, that's the Continuum of Care. It's the totality of things designed to serve the needs of homeless people and to remedy the fact that they're homeless. There's a relatively new leadership entity involved, and the people who are involved is actually very interesting because I think they were saying, and I thought I caught this correctly, that one of the new things is that the city of Pensacola is actually on the board. Allison Patton is actually on the city council president, is actually on the leadership team for the Continuum of Care. That's the first time, I think, that we've had government actually specifically involved in this coordinating project.
Our Continuum of Care has a governance structure. This governance structure is growing, it's getting maturity. It's led by our leadership council. And our leadership, the FL 511, that's our COC number within the state of Florida, FL 511 is led by a leadership council that's chaired by Connie Bookman, Pathways for Change, is co-chair or vice chaired by commission president or council president Patton. And then our secretary for that leadership council is Chandra Smiley, CEO of Community Health. And they were joined by 15 other community leaders that create our governance structure, our leadership council.
And this is really good because a lot of what we're able to do is going to be dependent on performance metrics, how long it takes us to help somebody all the way through this process, using those numbers to be able to draw down on funding that's available. Since government is involved in paying the cost of homelessness a lot of times and dealing with the problems that it causes, remedying it is certainly a government function, and that's, again, having government tightly connected with all of these, you know, otherwise private charities is, I mean, makes perfect sense. So what are we dealing with here? Well, one thing is you tend to think, and I know I tend to think, of homelessness. We tend to conflate that or make that, you know, try to make it the same thing as like panhandling. Well, they're overlapping, but they're not the same thing. Homelessness is people who do not have a permanent, stable housing situation. And you tend to think, at least I know I do, and so it's normal for most people, you think of homelessness as the people that you see, the tents that you see. Well, that's urban homelessness.
In urban areas, homelessness is very apparent to us. Okay, there, it's hard to hide when you have no place to be and you're in an urban environment. Equally, the homeless problem is equally concerning in our rural communities as well. It's harder to see the concentration, the congregation, as we call it, but it is still there as well.
I think we're human, and as humans, we notice the things that irritate or aggravate or bother us or that we see, and all of that is typically the panhandling, right? Or the tent somewhere, you know, when you're going into the woods and all of a sudden you see people living there. Okay, but homelessness as a problem is not just isolated to the things that you see. It's all kinds of things that you don't see, right? So what is this whole process, this whole continuum of care kind of concept?
Okay, so how does the system work for homeless service delivery? It starts with a concept called street outreach. Street outreach is how we identify those experiencing homelessness. We have wonderfully trained volunteers and staff that go into the community and build relationships and trust with individuals experiencing homelessness with the specific purpose of identifying what their needs are and working to bring them into the service delivery network.
And specifically figuring out what is standing between them and permanent stable housing.
And when they're successful in doing that work, those are the people experiencing homelessness enter coordinated entry. That's when we do the triage and the assessments. We figure out why is it that they're homeless. What are their barriers to permanent and stable housing?
Again, this is a brief given by Bruce Cady. He's the executive director of Opening Doors Northwest Florida at the Pensacola City Council meeting, the agenda review on Monday. More on this in a second because, again, like so many of the ongoing challenges that we struggle with, we're not alone in struggling with it. Everybody everywhere is struggling with this. But also, you know, just understanding it and understanding what we're doing to respond is kind of a part of being an informed citizen. So back to this in a second. PJ has traffic on the fives.
No problems or delays to report. If you see anything, 437-1620. I'm PJ with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, PJ. So again, continuum of care is the totality of entities or efforts being made to help the homeless at every point in the process of moving them from identifying them as having a need to getting them into stable, sustainable, safe housing, right?
We then move them down the service delivery system, emergency shelter, less than 90 days. Transitional housing, up to a year and a half, 18 months. And then finally, when those individuals leave from transitional housing into permanent housing, their clock on homelessness stops. It starts when street outreach engages with them, and it ends when we as a community are able to transition them to permanent housing. We as a community get graded on how long it takes us to do that.
And how effectively and how efficiently we do that as a community is part of what determines whether we get more access to funding, because obviously these funding sources, state and federal, are not going to come our way if we're not doing a good job of handling the cases that we're working on.
Moving individuals from crisis to stability, the faster the better. The more efficient we do it, the quicker we do it, the more chances we have to bring in additional funds to the community to provide services to the homeless.
All right, so what is the count? How many people are we dealing with? The point in time count every year in January, they have people, I think it's January, they have people go out and basically out on the ground and talk and count and identify how many we're dealing with.
We identified over 1,100 individuals that are experiencing homelessness just in this county, just in Escambia, with approximately 423 of those individuals are unsheltered. So unsheltered means they're sleeping in a place not meant for human habitation. Think a park, a car, an abandoned building.
So homeless might also include somebody who's forced to move in with a friend or a neighbor or relative that don't really have their own residence. It's the 400 or so that are completely unsheltered that are the most concerning. They could also be in a shelter, you know, either a temporary shelter, like if they're at Waterfront or something, or at Loaves and Fishes. They could be in a long-term but still not permanent housing situation. There's about, 1,500 about 1,100 or so in Escambia County that they're dealing with.
A significant factor, and I will slide on this, is first-time homelessness is a shocking number. Those individuals experiencing homelessness for the first time, 78 to 81% of the homeless that we surveyed, this was the first time that they were homeless.
Okay. 78%.
We all know the reasons why. The economy has been challenging. Housing capacity in all of our communities in the United States are taxed.
And the reason that's shocking, or at least I infer the reason that's shocking, is because you tend to think of somebody who is homeless as being kind of right on the margin, or maybe close to the margin. You know, maybe they get a job and they're able to afford a good apartment for a little while, and then maybe they fall behind on their rent, and then they're forced out, and then they're back to being homeless. And kind of people who come and go in and out of homelessness over time would be a significant percentage of, you know, so when you go out and find people who are homeless, you know, a significant percentage of those, you know, have been before or are so in an ongoing way. And he's saying, no, it's really high right now, the number pushing 80% of people where this is the very first time. And part of the problem is that even though we are able to help people and we're doing better at helping people all the time, we have more people becoming homeless all the time, too.
The PIT number for the top line number for these two communities is relatively flat.
That's the point in time count number.
The unsheltered number is declining. The sheltered, so transitional housing and emergency shelter, is increasing, but the numbers remaining flat.
Because they offset, which is, I mean, it's better to have them in shelters than in unsheltered, right? That's true. That's good. That means we're doing something beneficial to people, but if the overall number doesn't change, it means we're not winning the war ultimately.
That means that for every individual during the year that we assist to leave homelessness, at least one individual is backfilling that position. Mm. We need to speed up that process. We need to increase the capacity of housing such that we can bring that number down.
And that's, again, increasing our capacity. Certainly one of the keys in this, and he brought it up, is the lack of a no-barrier shelter. That's where anybody with any kind of problem, you know, they're high, they're drunk, they have, you know, mental issues, they can go because, you know, that's not really available. We don't have one of those. This is something that's very expensive. This is something that if the city and the county decide to do it, it takes a real commitment, millions of dollars to build, probably in the millions of dollars to operate. It can be done effectively. That's been a barrier. You know, the lack of a low barrier or no barrier shelter has been a barrier to us being more effective at handling this problem here in our community over the last couple of years. And that I thought a couple of years ago we were almost going to get there, and then we just didn't. And we haven't, and there hasn't, as far as I know, been any real progress on that. We'll have the mayor on next, or actually in about 20 minutes, we'll talk to him about that. Jen Brer asks about kids in particular.
Do you have a breakdown on how many children in the school district are experiencing homelessness? Do we know that?
So the schools track on an ongoing basis those experiencing homelessness. They start in late July to start the school year. Across the two counties, it was over 1,700 children. 1,200 were here in Escambia County, and a little over 500 were in Santa Rosa County.
Now, I don't know how that number interfaces with the other number he was saying. The only reason I mention that or have him share it is because it's an enormous number. And it's very hard to grasp, wrap your mind around the idea that, you know, what, about the population of one of our high schools-ish in our two-county area is homeless? And now it's across all K-12, and it's across both counties. But, man, if you kind of put them all in one place, that's a lot of kids. 722 on News Radio 92.3. So, again, this doesn't solve the problem, but I wanted you to be aware. You know, you're supposed to be an informed citizen, and I know you want to be. And this, I thought, was a very informative brief that Bruce Cady was giving. I have good confidence that this sort of new-ish organizational structure and, you know, what he's trying to do is going to have an impact. And I'm optimistic that we can do better and do more and help people more efficiently, but I just wanted to give you a little bit of information. 723 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Discouraged, defeated, disappointed, you're listening to Strength for Life.
Hey, this is Pastor James Johnson with Strength for Life. I want you to know that there are resources available on our website that are specifically designed to strengthen you in your walk with God. Maybe you're feeling weak in your prayer life because of unanswered prayer. I wrote a little booklet entitled When God Says No, which will strengthen you in how to deal with those times in your life when it seems that God is silent. Maybe you're struggling because someone you love is away from the Lord. They're wayward and your heart is broken. On our website, you'll find a booklet entitled Ministry to the Wayward. And it will strengthen you in knowing exactly how to help that person who is in a prodigal situation. You can find these strengthening resources and much more at our website, which is www.strengthforlife.church. Check it out today.
I move mountains for a living. Literally. That means I don't carry hand lotion, and when it comes to serious heartburn, I don't mess around with anything but Rolaids. Rolaids dual active formula has calcium carbonate and magnesium hydroxide that relieves heartburn fast. Yeah, you heard right. Two actives for that powerful relief. And the best part? The roll fits right here in my pocket, so I can get back to moving mountains.
Rolaids spells powerful relief. Read each label. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
There are a lot of questions about roof replacement in the news lately, such as insurance companies demanding replacement before they cancel coverage to companies not doing the job that they sold to you. Make sure you tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel tomorrow at 9:30 as Quality Roofing Solutions will answer your questions. Find out what makes Quality Roofing Solutions the premier contractor in Florida tomorrow at 9:30.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
You don't want rumors.
You want confirmation.
News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
You want confirmation.
Informative, local, dependable.
On your deathbed, you will receive total consciousness. So I got that going for me, which is nice.
Wanted to play that one because I just saw a meme on Facebook. It was a picture of Carl in a hazmat suit eating the candy bar, you know,
in the pool.
But in the empty reflecting pond in front of the Washington Monument that is being redone right now.
That's fitting.
It's no big deal. I don't know what the big deal is. All right, 7:26. PJ's got traffic for us. PJ.
Traffic brought to you by ECUA, making service easier with the new My ECUA mobile app available to download now. Pay your bill, report service issues, alerts, and recycling tips. Southbound US 29 is running heavy from 10 Mile to about I-10. US 98 westbound in Gulf Breeze, the Naval Live Oaks area, seeing quite a bit of traffic as well. Use caution. I'm PJ with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, PJ. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Good morning. President Trump has now landed in China. He's set to meet with leader Xi Jinping on Thursday. His visit, of course, comes as the conflict in Iran continues with a ceasefire in place at the moment. China is Iran's biggest trading partner, so I'm sure that'll be a big topic of discussion.
Did you see the students all waving their little flags?
Oh, I must have missed that.
Yeah, they had a bunch of students there dressed in what I thought was kind of matching colors for Air Force One. It was like blue and light blue, and they had little red and white flags that I'm not sure what was on the flag, but they were waving them sort of in unison. It wasn't quite the Beijing Olympics in terms of performance skill, but, you know, all the students were there very happy. I guess they're just red flags, not white flags. I'm watching a replay of it now. One half has Chinese flags, one half has American flags. That's what it is. And they're waving them back and forth. I just think those students are going to be sore in their arms tomorrow. Anyway, because they did it all the way through the plane lands, exit, walk, meet and greet, hugging, whatever, and then getting into the cars and taking off. So that was their participation trophy.
Well, I bet they got the flags at a discount because they're all made in China anyway.
Nice.
Google and SpaceX are talking about putting data centers in space now. The Wall Street Journal says the orbiting facilities are not a done deal yet. And they're looking at whether they would actually be cost effective when you factor in launch costs. And the first openly gay NBA player has died. His family announced on Tuesday. Jason Collins died at his home on Tuesday from stage 4 brain cancer.
All right. Thanks so much, David. I appreciate it. 7:28 on News Radio 92.3. If you are thinking about selling or buying a home, or you're adding a home, or you're getting a vacation rental, or, you know, you live on the beach, you want to move back to the city, or you live in the city, you want to move to the beach or the country or whatever, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty, they're really good at this. They sold 209 homes last year, 4 a week, which is amazing. In the height of the market, when everybody was selling everything very easily and quickly, they were selling well over 200 homes. And then, you know, the market got tougher. And a tough market will distinguish between those who do very well and those who, you know, try. But they were down to 170, which is still a lot, 175 homes in a year. Don't get me wrong. That's three a week. That's amazing. Then 165 2 years ago. But last year, same market, and they have figured it out how to push it up even higher, 209, which is amazing. Selling homes quickly, finding out, you know, staging it, photographing it, following up all the way through to the contract phase and all the way through to closing, which is the only thing really you want. You don't want to, like, try to sell a home. You want to succeed at selling a home. So give her a call and find out what makes her different. You know, don't take it on my advice. Just talk to her, and you'll see. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Levin Rinke Realty. Let's see, 437-1620. What was I just going to mention to you? I've kind of got in the back of my head I might do this a little bit more often, but since I mentioned the Carl meme, cleaning out the under renovation reflecting pond at the Washington Monument, this is kind of from the meme pile. I don't really recommend this one, but it would be funny. If you're bored at work, just print out someone else's resignation letter and leave it in the printer casually. It's cruel. 1 minute you're young and cool, maybe even a little dangerous, and the next minute you're reading Amazon reviews for birdseed. Oh, PJ, tell me you know that's true. I think we're all in that situation. Let's see. There was another one here. I've lost it. Meta, tell me you don't relate to this. You have something that you want to go look at again, and tab refreshes, and you lose it because Meta sucks. 1,000 times I've had this happen to me. In any case, we'll have Mayor DC Reeves up next. Stick around.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Dozens of youth in a military van playing for the arrival of President Trump in China for critical meetings with China's President Xi Jinping.
President is trying to set the tone that he is coming at this from a position of strength, not weakness. Of course, you've got the Iran conflict looming in the background of these trade talks. He wants to make sure the focus remains on trade, not Iran.
It's White House correspondent Aisha Hosni in Beijing. As for China and the Islamic Republic,
normally 40 to 50% of China's oil passes through the Strait of Hormuz, while the U.S. blockade remains in effect exactly 1 month today. In fact, shipping data shows Chinese-owned oil tankers passing through the Strait of Hormuz overnight with Iran's permission.
That's Fox's Lucas Tomlinson in Dubai. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 731. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 63 degrees here across the area. We'll get a full look at our forecast. Brooke Richardson from Channel 3 has that for us in just a few minutes. Well, Pensacola's annual independent financial audit came back almost spotless, just one minor finding relating to a documentation glitch in the housing department. Mayor D.C. Reeves yesterday saying the audit is a check and balance that gives citizens confidence in how public funds are managed.
They reviewed 40 different files for tenants. There were three instances where the third-party income verification wasn't documented in the electronic record. We learned through that there was a kind of a cut and paste scenario where when you refreshed it, you lost the original documentation. Point being, of those three that didn't come back with documentation, all of them are income qualified, income eligible. So nothing slipped through the cracks from a procedural standpoint.
And Mayor Reeves did say the audit found no material weakness, no significant deficiency, and no non-compliance in citywide financial reporting. Also, the city now has a new assistant parks director, Joel Holmes, currently with Bainbridge Parks Authority in Georgia, joining the city's Parks and Rec team later this month on May 26th. Holmes brings about 25 years of experience on parks and recreation, including nearly two decades in executive and director level leadership roles. The mayor yesterday during his press conference saying he's excited to have Holmes on board. Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons is headed to Washington, D.C. today to add Deputy Jeremy Cassidy's name to the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. Now, this completes a trio of memorial ceremonies that have been held for Cassidy, including local and state memorials in Tallahassee and and now a national memorial. And Sheriff Simmons said it's only right to be present at all of them.
We don't often go to the all three memorials, but unfortunately, in this case, you add one of your own to these memorials, and the family goes, we think it's only right and fitting that we represent Escambia County and say absolutely thank you to the sacrifice.
Cassidy succumbed last year to injuries suffered in the line of duty years earlier. The agency has already attended ceremonies again in Tallahassee and its own local memorial. The sheriff said Cassidy's name will now be permanently honored at the national level in Washington, D.C. Well, there might be some plans in the works to close that controversial immigration detention facility down in South Florida. The New York Times reporting that the state may close Alligator Alcatraz. The Times says Homeland Security officials have determined that that facility is, well, just too expensive because it costs apparently about $1 million a day to operate. If it were to close, detainees could be transferred by the end of the month. At last count, ICE said there were about 1,400 detainees in the facility. The Florida Division of Emergency Management says it was always meant to be temporary. It is 7:35. News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with PJ.
Travis brought to you by Florida West EDA. Florida West Economic Development Alliance works to create high wage jobs and private capital investment that grows Escambia County's tax base. We have one accident on the board, a vehicle crash at County Road 197A at Oak Tree Lane in Milton. No roadblock associated with that. Scrolling over to Gulf Breeze, the US 98 westbound area, Gulf Breeze, Naval Live Oaks area. Seeing quite a bit of congestion right now. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be looking at some sunshine today, high near 82 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 65. For Thursday, sunny skies, high near 84. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 67. Heading into your Friday, we will keep sunny skies around, high near 82 degrees. And Friday night, temperatures dropping near 68. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And we've got 63 degrees with partly cloudy skies. Your next news in 30 minutes and breaking news anytime it happens. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Traders are watching for the release of April's producer price index later today. Economists polled by Dow Jones are expecting a headline increase of 0.5% on the month, which is in line with March's rate. Data drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern. Kool-Aid said it is launching electrolyte packets made without artificial dyes and sugar. Parent company Kraft Heinz is trying to reverse slumping sales by modernizing many of its iconic brands. The U.S. market for powder concentrates has exploded in recent years, thanks to the rise of single-serve electrolyte mixes. Chinese tech giant Tencent has reported revenues rose 9% in its first quarter 2026 earnings, but missed analyst expectations. Company officials said Tencent made significant initial progress on new AI products in the first quarter. They added that Tencent's AI agent tool, WorkBuddy, was the most popular agentic service in China. Futures are mixed ahead of inflation data later this morning. Dow futures down by more than 100 points. NASDAQ futures up by more than 200 points. That's Your Money Now.
There is a big difference in the type of service you get from companies that do air duct cleaning. Hi, this is Todd from Gulf Coast Air Care, and I want you to know the difference between a quality job and a blow-and-go duct cleaning job. Let me ask you this. Do you really think you can get a one-carat diamond for 10 bucks? It's just like getting a $99 whole house duct cleaning. There are guidelines from the National Air Duct Cleaners Association and also the Better Business Bureau. A true inspection, cleaning, and restoration of an AC system includes the equipment and ductwork by a licensed and certified company. It's like a full detail for your car instead of the cheapy method of running it through a $5 wash and go. Air conditioners are expensive. Keeping them clean and well-maintained is a guaranteed way to have better health and comfort. So you decide what works for you, the $5 wash and go or a full detail top to bottom. At Gulf Coast Air Care, we take pride in the certifications and the licenses that we hold. If you want the best quality and award-winning customer service, you can find us on the web at gulfcoastaircare.com or call 934-2768.
As she stared at me through the window, I realized the time we spent in the backyard on her trailer just wasn't fulfilling. We used to have so much fun on the water. I just couldn't crank her up.
But Key Marine did. Fun days on the bay are back. And my Yamaha outboard runs better than ever.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. Key Marine, your Yamaha outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola. Google Key Marine or find them on Facebook.
News Radio 92.3 congratulates Andrew McKay on being the only broadcaster to make Florida's 50 over 50 list for 2026. For more than a decade, Andrew has kept Escambia and Santa Rosa counties informed, covering local meetings, interviewing officials, and breaking down big stories that matter. He takes pride in keeping the community informed and making sense of the headlines that shape our daily lives. It's a well-earned honor for a voice our community trusts every morning. Congratulations, Andrew, from News Radio 92.3.
You don't always have time to sit and listen.
That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does.
Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin.
Weekdays 4 to 7.
On News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
To answer for constituents, they've been marking the natural gas throughout my district, and they were asking what that's about, if anybody knows. It's been a pretty widespread marking of the gas going back through.
We never mark gas lines because we know where they are. The markings you're seeing are for fiber that are going to tear up neighborhoods and do a very bad job of restoration.
Mm. Well, that will go over well for them.
It's T-Mobile.
Yes.
I think this might be my all-time favorite comment from Jen Brayer. Oh, man. We lived through it in my neighborhood. You know, I live in the county, not in the city. But, you know, the new fiber came through, and they were a problem. And then, other utilities came through. I know ECUA ran some pipes in the same time because they were trying to take advantage of the fact that work was being done. And, you know, it was not good. Then in the end, they were cutting holes in people's driveways, and they all... Man, I cannot swear on the radio, but they look like bleep. I mean, they do. They look terrible. So, woohoo, coming to your neighborhood. There's nothing you can do about it. Mayor D.C. Reeves joins us now. That's the key thing to understand. Number one, this is not the city. Number two, there's nothing you can do to stop it. So sit back and enjoy the suck, right?
Yeah, well, we're trying to do our best to do what little that we can. And yes, you have nailed it. This is a contractual right-of-way that other than pulling permits, the city can't stop it. The city doesn't have a lot of purview in what the utilities having the easement of the right-of-way, the city's right-of-way. So that's the work you're seeing. But I'm tired of it too. And I shared with my press conference yesterday that I sent a letter to these companies saying, this is ridiculous and you need to be, fixing these things. And we have provided publicly the point of contact phone numbers for those utility companies with the hope of number one, making sure that the public understands who to call, because I've gotten many texts from friends that say, hey, this happened, or my sprinkler got cut, or things like that. What do we do? Which is, a big part of my job, right? If you don't know, then you go to the mayor, you go to the city and say, what's going on, understandably.
Right.
That folks have done that. And I found it interesting. I shared this yesterday. That right when we shared that, information, I got a couple calls or texts from some of the folks working for the utility that says, man, we've been getting a lot of phone calls. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. that's where they're supposed to be going. Welcome to the club, I think is what I said yesterday. So, listen, if work is good and adding fiber and access to the internet, fast access is great. But we have the expectation that you're going to put it back the way it came, and that is crystal clear. So we're staying on top of it as best we can as kind of a third party to this. But I do encourage anybody who's had any issues, just Google it right now. It's on our website. It's on our social media. Find those direct points of contact with AT&T and T-Mobile if you're having any particular issues, and it is their job to get it corrected.
And it's worth saying that, some crews, some installers, some are better than others. It's not a hegemonic thing that it's everybody. But you do feel powerless as a homeowner when it happens, because, who do you call? You can't call Ghostbusters. You know, who are you going to call to solve this problem? And they almost never. I mean, it's a wide range of restoration. Sometimes it's quite good, and sometimes it's like, my God, somebody dropped a bomb on my yard, so thanks for nothing. Let's talk about the continuum of care for a second, because you and I were chatting briefly off air before you came on, like we always do, and you know, I covered this extensively a minute ago about, you know, what's being done at Opening Doors Northwest Florida and Bruce Cady, the new executive director there. And I think it's a really good thing that government is actually a part of this decision-making board. And to me, that was the first time. But you told me that it's not even just that.
Yeah. I think two key things have happened in the last 24 months. If you recall, I called a joint meeting with Dr. Joe Savage from the Intergovernmental Agency on Homelessness federally. He was our representative. We had a meeting at Bayview Park about 2 years ago. And during that assessment, he kind of confirmed what we already knew, which is we had some real deficiencies as it pertained to how the procedural operation, nothing below board, but just the efficiency and operation of our current COC setup. And quickly, why a COC matters in one sentence is that is the spigot of federal money that comes to have your community solve homelessness. That is the sole spigot. So the COC is the federally designated area that says this is how much money you get from the federal government to solve homelessness. And that's based on your population. It's based on what they call the PIP count, point in time, in essence, a count of the homeless population within your community. So that's why you could understand how vital a COC is. Because if you're not writing things down and you're not on top of things, that could be the difference, I believe, right now in millions of dollars annually coming in. To help solve homelessness. So that's why the COC is so important. So I'm just going to call it as it is. We were not in a efficient place a couple of years ago. And now with Bruce on and what you just mentioned, basically it was an overhaul of the structure of our local COC that now has a governance board that has some oversight. The COC still operates as the COC. It still has its folks, but you now have some extra, not only eyes and ears to make sure that things are going well, but that's extra advocates. I mean, that's what it really is let us in here to make sure that if you need something from the city, the county, all of these other amazing agencies that we have around here trying to solve this issue, that we stay on top of it. So I think we have made enormous strides. You may not notice it if you're just not paying as close attention.
Yeah.
But where we are today with our COC and leadership there compared to where we were 2 years ago is not only night and day, but something that I'm certainly energized to help with given the circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to talk about how all these different organizations need to work together and not duplicate services and be part of a team. It's another thing entirely to create a 15-member board that involves, like, your mom, Connie Bookman, and, you know, Chandra Smiley and Allison Patton from the city and all kinds of other folks in organizing, actually not just getting government in that process, but having a board at all is something that's a new thing. And so, yeah, I think he's doing great work, and I love to see the results we're going to get from this. We're talking to Pensacola Mayor D.C. Rees. D.C., hang on for just a second. PJ has traffic on the fives.
Still working that vehicle crash, County Road 197A at Oak Tree Lane in Milton. No roadblock associated with that. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, PJ. Back to Mayor D.C. Rees, and I want to remind you that this interview is brought to you by Lambert Transfer and Storage. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Visit GoLambertTeam.com. Mr. Mayor, and you know, you and I have talked quite a bit. I think you've really, honestly, you've really done quite a good job of communicating the sanitation thing and, you know, talking about causes and all of that and remedies and, you know, the city's behind and there's all kinds of, and I've talked about it quite a bit this morning. But, you know, for the people who just maybe haven't heard any of it, can you maybe just give them the 1 minute, here's why it's been a problem this year and here's what we're doing to solve it?
Yeah, absolutely. So ultimately, the backup in yard trash that we've had has been spurred solely by a massively unforeseen increase in total tons picked up. So we were at 6.1 million. So if you just take February through May of 2024, that was 6.1 million pounds of just yard trash, yard waste. Then last year was 7.7, February through May. This year we're at almost 9.1. And with 20 or 18 days left in the month. So we will go from 6.1 to 7.7 to over 10 million in a matter of 24 months. And so what the difficulty that's caused us is, listen, if we had 1,000 new customers sign up for regular garbage service, that's predictable. We would see the 1,000 come in, right? We would know, we would say, man, we need a new truck. We need a new crew. When it's a free service that you do not need to necessarily call, right? You just put it out at the road.
this is an inevitable scenario that if it continues to increase this way, there's going to be a year where you don't know. And we just certainly didn't expect it to increase this violently over a 24-month stretch. And so that really is why it's been a particular problem this year compared to previous years, is that we've expected the surge in previous years. We didn't, certainly did not expect to pick up 4 million more pounds, 4 million more pounds of yard waste than we are. Than we did 2 years ago. So that's about 1,000 truckloads in addition to over the same amount of time. So
I was doing the math on this because I try to conceptualize things, and I don't know what a million pounds of yard debris means. But if you think in 2024, we had about 1,500 total truckloads of yard debris during that three-month period. Last year, it was 1,800 truckloads, and this year it's going to push 2,500 truckloads when all is said and done. I mean, there's no job where you can add 30 to 40% of your workload and not suffer a problem when you didn't anticipate it. So,
exactly. It's the unpredictable key to that. But the bottom line is, and I said this yesterday, if I'm one of the 55,000 people who pay taxes here and pay for a sanitation bill, yep. You have an expectation, you know, hey, Mayor, I hear you. Come get this yard trash. Well, that's what we're doing. So we spent another $50,000 of injected temp labor, more trucks. All of that are hitting the ground. We have at least one truck in every single neighborhood 6 days a week right now, at least, if not more. So that is unprecedented for us to be doing. That has not happened as long as I've been here. So I do appreciate everybody's patience, and I get it. You got other things to worry about, and you want that picked up. It's my job to worry about it, and we're going to get it picked up.
And just one small note that Daryl Singleton, the sanitation director, made the other day is, do please use bags, just because that is a faster process for them. Even plastic bags are okay. Mm-hmm. At this point, we're in, you know, recovery from the yard debris apocalypse, and so anything helps at this point. Right. Every little bit helps. Switching gears a little bit, let's talk about the the tree. You mentioned that you're working on a tree ordinance with Jared Moore. There's obviously been a story about this one tree downtown, or two trees, I guess, on this lot, where the neighbors, and my understanding, I mean, Brian Spencer, a former city council president member, had put a very elaborate comment on that, involved comment, in which he said he doesn't understand why these people didn't just buy the tree, you know, or buy the lot. It wouldn't have been that much money to create a little HOA for them, and they could have put a couple $1,000s, $10,000 or $15,000 a piece up into it, and they could have, because ultimately you can't stop somebody from taking down a tree on their lot by law in Florida, but the discouragement from taking down particularly old, big, beautiful trees maybe needs to be heightened. Is that where you guys are at?
Exactly. I think we need to add a little reality on both sides, because, I mean, it is such a divisive issue because of, one, the fallacy that people believe that the mayor or the city council get to just designate and tell a private property owner exactly what they can do with their property permanently, which is, as you just mentioned, is not the case. So that's an easy gaslighting thing to say on social media, as we see, is why is the mayor letting them do this? Why is the city council letting them do this? Well, you got to go call Tallahassee because we cannot, at the end of the day, if someone wants to do it. However, we can put better controls in place. And so what Jared Moore and I have looked at is, you know, we have a big laundry list of protected and heritage trees. I think we need to probably sift through that. We're looking at right now, we're having a meeting, I believe. I have one on Friday to kind of look at where we came back in terms of comps of what other cities in Florida are actually charging as the fee to cut down a tree. Because I, on the other side of the argument, I don't think we've touched the fees on cutting these trees down since like 2009.
Wow.
Which, you know, there's lots of people that talk, you know, about, well, we should make it more restrictive. Well, we haven't made it more restrictive in the last 17 or 18 years in terms of the fee and fine. But that shouldn't just be put blanket across every of the, you know, million protected trees and heritage trees we have listed. But what do we always think of? We think of these big, beautiful heritage oaks,
right?
Different types of oaks that we want to continue to see in our community. I love our tree canopy. It makes us special. And so, you know what? We cannot tell a private property owner they can't do it. But when these fines are sometimes $400, $500, it needs to be painful enough for you to maybe ask your architect to build around it, or to maybe figure out how to associate your house on the wrong, you know, on this side. But when somebody's building a, you know, $500,000 house or $1 million house, a $400 fine is not going to be in the best interest of the city. So
We're just trying to put
with the fine for taking right down the offset payment for taking down a Heritage Oak is $400.
There's different. I'm oversimplifying,
okay,
it, but it's in that ballpark. In certain instances, can be an extremely low number.
Right.
You know, there's lots of complexity to it. But the bottom line is, Jared and I are going to come back with, hey, if you're going to take down a tree that's important to our canopy, then it's gonna be painful. That's the whole idea. Is that yes, you can still do it, but it needs to be painful. But that doesn't need to be every type of tree either. You know, and I think we kind of took the nuclear bomb to the anthill approach in the previous iteration, where we included so many trees, as protected and heritage and all these things. So that's what we're looking at, and I'm looking forward to bringing something to council for them to consider.
All right, very good. Well, we'll look forward to talking about that more in the future. We don't have time to talk about it, but I know we're all, we're super proud of Keela Richardson. I know you were too, and some of your comments were fantastic. And seeing her at the airport yesterday, I was just all a very good thing. And the ad for us was fantastic. I love seeing Pensacola get promoted at somebody else's dime. Not really. I mean, barely on our dime whatsoever. All right, the lightning round we always like to end with. We were just talking about your mom a little bit, Connie Bookman. What's your mom's favorite phrase or admonition that she said to you 1,000 times if she said it once?
I was going to say, me and my brother were 14 months apart and fought all the time. I was thinking, go pick out a belt might have been her favorite phrase.
Nice. Well done. At a time when that was good, and it still should be. Yeah. Do you have a separate towel for bath, hand, and face? Are those all three separate things for you, or just one for all of it, or what?
I'm bath and face.
Faces separate. Okay. Yeah, all right. Interesting.
Two, yeah.
And something about your line of work, being a mayor, that is completely fake in movies that people or TV, where, people have the wrong idea entirely because they've seen TV and they know what a mayor does.
Oh, gosh. Telling people that they can't cut trees down on their yard. Does that count?
No.
Oh, man. I could give you a laundry list of these. Or why don't I take the Grand Hotel from a private property owner? There's just some misunderstanding of the legal purview of my job. Let's encapsulate it that way.
I got you. Very good. But generally, in TV, the mayor can do anything he wants anytime, and that sense of power welcome to American government. Mayor DC Reeves, as always, sir, thank you for the time. We'll look forward to talking to you next week and the city council meeting tomorrow night. We'll see you next week.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
PJ has traffic on the fives.
Travis brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Taking a look at the big board, still working that vehicle crash, County Road 197A at Oak Tree Lane in Milton. No roadblock associated with that. Also getting reports that 9 Mile westbound is backed up to almost Pine Forest. That's causing traffic to back up as well on Pine Cove Drive. I'm PJ with your traffic on the fives.
Need to move across town, across country, or even across the globe? Trust Lambert Moving Systems. Veteran-owned, military-approved, and now celebrating over 100 years of moving excellence. As a quality award winner, BBB accredited, and agent for North American Van Lines, they handle local, long-distance, industrial, and international moves with packing, storage, and warehousing available. Serving Pensacola to Mobile and all surrounding areas and supporting the Gary Sinise Foundation. Choose the team with a legacy. Lambert Moving Systems. Go LambertTeam.com. Looking for the ultimate family beach house right here on Pensacola Beach? Casa de Luna is a huge ground-level home with 9 bedrooms, 8 baths, private heated pool, and room to sleep 26 adults. No stairs to haul coolers and kids. You walk right out to your own pool or take a short stroll to our amazing white sand golf beaches. It's perfect for family reunions, wedding groups, church retreats, or big friends getaways. There are multiple king suites, plenty of porch space, and a special game porch for the whole family. And right now, they're offering special rates for locals on select dates, so you don't have to get on a plane to feel like you're on vacation. Call 850-485-7222 for more information or to book your dates. That's 850-485-7222. See photos and details at CasaDeLunaPensacola.com. That's CasaDeLunaPensacola.com.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Beret. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Beret Jewelers.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
You don't need another money hack. You need a plan. Dave Ramsey, weeknights at 7 on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 7:59 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Let's get David Wayne in here with a quick headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning. President Trump has landed in China. He's set to meet with Xi Jinping tomorrow. And Google and SpaceX are reportedly talking about putting data centers in space.
On the moon! On Mars! Of course, why not? At least, you know, one thing we know about space is it's very cold. So cooling the data center may not be a problem, especially if it can communicate with us through, like, Starlink.
Local talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3. WNRP Golf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.
He got the red carpet treatment. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox